prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Thursday, March 21st, 2024. Hi, Dave.
Yes, ma'am. Hello, Melody. And happy Single Parent Day.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have to be a day we celebrate because it should be families. But those who do,
yep,
it's a tough job.
Moms and dads holding down the fort with all their hard work, devotion, and sacrifices involved in single parenting. According to the U.S. census, about 23% of American children live with a single mom. About 4% live with a single father. So put together, that's about one in three kids. So if you're a single parent raising your children or grandchildren today, we salute you.
Okay, let's go ahead and get to the markets today. And boy, did we have, I came into the office and turned my computers on and what? $45 gold was up to hit a high over 2200. It took a little bit of a breather after the record, but we're up $22 at 2183. Silver was up there too, but again, that pulled back a little bit, still hovering around the $25 level. Platinum was up 12 at 911, and palladium was up $17 at $1,017. So, you know, what a day we had in gold. So it was very exciting. And, you know, it's kind of been and actually hit an all-time high of $2,222 earlier in the session. So buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be an exciting time if you're owning gold and silver. European markets, they were all positive, I guess, all based on our Fed's comment as, you know, European stocks hit records too. Asian markets, Shanghai was down a couple points, but that's it. 10-year yield holding at 4.27%. Crude oil was down 23 cents at 81.04. Natural gas was down less than a half a percent and 1.69. And so what'd the dollar do today, Dave? Do you have that? by chance? I guess you don't.
No, I do. I just took me a minute to find it. Up about 0.2 of a point at 104.
So yeah, that's a pretty strong gain in the dollar that we've seen, because it was 102, 103, to be back up over 104. And to see gold still holding at these levels, you know, is pretty interesting. And but again, there's no panic buying, ladies and gentlemen. Please keep that in mind. There's no panic buying. So I do think we might see some pullbacks, although who knows? I think in these markets, we don't know, because there isn't anything that's the norm. And so when there isn't anything that's reality-based, anything can happen at any time. So, and that's one of the reasons why you own gold and silver. Put your portfolio with some reality in the for balance. But so we had a great day in the markets today. So, you know, and it's all about the Fed speak. And, you know, we all know that the Fed's now discussing on how to shrink its balance sheet. We know that they held their interest rate steady yesterday. And at a press conference, Jay Powell said Fed officials discussed a strategy for that it's been using to tighten financial conditions. The FOMC didn't make a final decision at its meeting, but he expects it'll be appropriate to start that slowdown fairly soon. And again, my question, and I say it every time, Dave, is why would they even bother lowering rates if the economy and everything else is as perfect as they say it is? What is the point? That is supposed to be, if you remember why they lowered the rates, they kept lowering them because everything was hollowing out. So why would they do it if everything is peachy king? So the Fed has shed a pardon?
No, I'm just going to say they won't.
No, they won't. They won't. So the Fed shed about $1.5 trillion in treasuries over the past couple of years on mortgage bonds. It's been letting the securities run off at a pace of roughly $95 billion every month. They're still holding a balance sheet of about $7.5 trillion. They talk about the quantitative tightening, or QT is what they use to cool financial conditions, along with hikes to the Fed's benchmark fund rates since March of 2022, Dave.
Yeah, pardon me. In discussing a slowdown of that runoff, the Fed says it hopes to avoid the sort of messy upheaval in the markets that happened the last time it tried to wind down its balance sheet at the end of last decade. Powell said the decision to slow the pace of runoff doesn't mean our balance sheet will shrink, but allows us to approach that ultimate level more gradually. Which just totally doesn't make sense. But in other words, it will shrink, just not as quickly as the $95 billion a month might suggest. Now, in 2017, it started this QT roll-off once before when Melody's BFF, Janet Yellen, was in charge. That shrinking drained bank reserves that were held at the Fed and led to some unexpected turbulence in 2019 after Powell had taken over. Melody and I talked about that a bunch at the time. It created a cash crunch that caused rates to jump on the short-term repurchase agreement loans, or repo loans, that banks make to each other. And that forced the Fed to begin buying again, which eventually calmed markets down. Now, to avoid such a thing this time, Powell says the Fed will carefully monitor money market conditions and ask what kind of banking reserves are in the banking system, just paying more closer attention to that. Now, he characterizes these reserves as, quote, ample, although the Fed is aiming for abundant, which he said is a little less than ample. So I guess that suggests that there's a little more room to run out that $7.5 trillion dollars, which was as high as 8.965 in April 2022, before they pivoted and decided to move in the opposite direction.
Well, good luck, Federal Reserve. That's all I have to say. Good luck. And as far beyond, you know, there's so much that's going on and how they've funneled things in, you know, to where, you know, there is no transparency on what's really going on with the banking industry and, you know, all the quantitative easings they put in and all. I mean, it's.
Yes.
I hope that they can continue to do it.
Folks, if you're not a subscriber to Wall Street on Parade newsletter by Pam and Russ Martins, do so. They pay very close attention to this stuff and actually write about it fairly regularly. It's a great publication, and it's free. So stay informed.
I came across another article today that they talked about the quantum QE by a different name is still QE. And it's pretty interesting, and the numbers sometimes are just staggering. When you look at, you know, they had graphs on the debt, the federal budget situation and debt. I mean, it's just incredible. The graph shows the Treasury debt, the debt that has grown annually for 57 years. And when you look at their debt and the amount of tax revenue, I mean, it's... it isn't funny. It's just like, okay, yes, a system that's ready to implode. But anyway, when it happens, we'll know. But until then, we don't know when it will. I guess some good news, although sales are still down 3.3% year over year, we saw sales of existing homes that surged in February from January, 9.5%. I don't know why. It was a pretty... I think winter was pretty strong, you know, in February. I think there were some major snowstorms so across the country, and we had those fires. And so it's kind of interesting why this popped as much as it did. And now remember, it's still down 3.3% year over year for the sales of existing homes. This report is by the National Association of Realtors. They were even expecting a slight drop. And we saw a lot of the gain in the West and the South. They were both up. The Northeast was unchanged. So we saw inventory in that rise 10.3% year over year. But that still represents a low 2.9-month supply. So it's still low. What else you got on that, Dave?
Well, higher demand apparently pushed the median housing price up even higher, up almost 6% from 2023 to $384,500, the 8th straight month of annual gains. 20% of homes sold above their list price. Now, the sales count is based on closings. So contracts were likely signed in December and January when the 30-year fixed mortgage rate dropped to the mid-6% range. That might account for this
big
this surge. Yeah, people really wanted to get into a house, and I guess they figured, well, it's below 7 now, close to 6.5, let's get in. You know, when rates come down, again, they can always refinance. But first-time buyers didn't fare so well. They represented about 26% of buyers last month, down from about 28% in January. 40% is the norm, or has been, was the pre-pandemic norm. And cash sales, 33% of these home sales. So Larry Young, who's the realtor's chief economist, said that consumers now may be accepting a new normal for mortgage rates.
Yeah, so there again, no reason to drop rates. But you know what? These all cash sales were up. I would think that was due to a lot of the people downsizing, older people downsizing to where they do have some savings in the with the stock markets hitting what they did. They probably cashed in their some of their retirement and pension and paid cash for their homes. It's better than buying and paying at 7%. Right. There's a lot of your financial and a lot of your financial planners will tell a lot of retirees, stay with a mortgage, you know. But that was also when rates were much lower too. So it was another jobless claims today, Dave.
Yeah, that's
they unexpectedly
true.
Fell again. Wow. Jerome Powell again, he was in the news a lot this week, said he didn't see cracks in the labor market. He says it's in good shape, noting the extreme imbalances that we saw in the early parts of the pandemic recovery had mostly been resolved. And Christopher Rupke, chief economist at FWD Bonds, said Fed officials are waiting on confirmation that inflation is in check. Well, would you please tell the grocery stores that inflation is in check?
Yes. I will.
Please? Would somebody please tell them?
There's a new one opening in my neighborhood next Thursday. Well, I'll let you know how the prices are in there.
Okay.
Maybe we'll see that it's they've hit the Fed target.
You think?
And we can start a letter writing campaign to Jerome.
Yeah. Say, we want to shop where you shop. Heck, you know. But
you stay away. That demand will drive prices back up again. You stay out of my neighborhood now.
You know it's that supply and demand. Beware. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. What else would you like to add to that? Did I?
I don't think anything. I mean, continuing claims, which basically means claims that are ongoing beyond the initial claim period, increased slightly by 4,000 nationwide to about little over 1.8 million. So now this economist at High Frequency Economics, Rabila Faruqi, expects job growth to slow somewhat over the coming months. But believes the headline unemployment rate will remain low this year.
Well, some good news, and I just want to I'm going to be leaving here. I just have to get some things done today. But you know what, Dave, you and I, we talked about on the Monday, Wednesday, and Friday program, but we haven't mentioned it that there's only this program and two more. At this time slot that I'll share with you. So next week, I'll make sure that I'm here for the full hour next week as we finish up the 4 o'clock program. And, you know, you've done so well. I remember when we first started doing the programs together and you've really grown into the program.
Oh.
And it was...
Well, thanks.
Yes. So
it's been a lot of fun, and I'll have more to say next Thursday, my last episode, as it were, and tell you about some of my thoughts about what we've talked about over the years, and you know, like I like to say, onward and upward.
Yes, and we're still working. We're still going to do... there's going to be things online. There's going to be, I'm working on something else you'll still know that Discount Gold and Silver is still there. We're not, only the 4 o'clock program is going away. We are still here. We are still here. And it's just, it's a challenge. I don't think people realize how difficult it is to do radio shows, the amount of time it takes and research. I hear the music. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Talking away. I don't know what to say. I'll say it anyway.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody off the rest of the program, taking care of client orders. You know where to reach her, 1-800-375-4188. Check out our website, dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. While you're there, sign up for our weekly American Survival newsletter and our What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog. Again, dgscoins.com. And don't forget to ask us about our current coin specials. Right now, we're offering 1/20/24 1-ounce gold American Eagle plus 21-ounce silver eagles for the fluctuating, emphasis on fluctuating, price of $29.55, including shipping. That's a great deal. The price that I mentioned is based on a spot price of $21.92 for gold and $25.25 for silver. So prices will fluctuate throughout the day depending on market conditions. But do call while supplies last, because they won't last long. 1-800-375-4188. As Melody mentioned in at the top of the program, in the market report, the rally in gold continues with prices hitting another all-time high today. And there's certainly much more room for it to rise more as central banks around the world continue to purchase it in record amounts. Akash Doshi, who's Citibank's or the Citigroup's North American head of commodities research, believes prices could rise to $2,300 in the second half of this year, especially against a backdrop of the Fed starting to cut interest rates as early as June. As we know, gold prices tend to share an inverse relationship with interest rates. As interest rates dip, gold becomes more appealing compared to fixed income assets like bonds, which would yield weaker returns in a low interest rate environment. Other analysts have also forecast gold prices to notch new highs this year. The World Gold Council's global head of central banks, Shaoakai Fan, says central banks who have bought historic levels of gold over the past 2 years continue to be strong buyers in 2024 as well. Now, these purchases have strengthened gold prices despite the high interest rates since they began in March 2022, along with a strong dollar. Higher rates tend to reduce the appeal of gold compared with bonds, as gold doesn't pay any interest, while a stronger dollar usually erodes the sheen of bullion for holders of other currencies. Well, strong physical demand for gold is also fueled by its appeal as a safe haven asset, particularly among geopolitical uncertainties and volatility, which we see a lot of these days. As Doshi notes, in the past decade, Russia and China have been the two largest buyers. However, central bank purchases in recent years have diversified. China's the leading driver for both consumer demand and central bank gold purchases. And the country's not likely to slow down, they say, especially as it continues to decouple from U.S. treasuries. Among central banks, the People's Bank of China was the largest buyer of gold last year. Their weak economy and embattled real estate sector in particular also drove more investors toward gold, with individual investment remaining robust there. Poland, too. Their central bank was the second largest net consumer of gold, snapping up 130 tons last year. Challenges of the Russia-Ukraine war right next door, essentially, to them, drives Poland's desire for financial stability. Singapore recorded the third highest gold purchases, driven by purchases by their monetary authority, which bought 76.5 tons. Stronger gold prices also were driven by retail purchases of jewelry, bars, and coins in China, India, and around the world. Aside from China and India, though, Turkey's gold demand last year almost doubled for over 2022. The unrelenting consumer inflation there, limited alternative investments, and domestic political uncertainty during their presidential elections drove Turkey's demand for gold. So if you have some spare change right now, ladies and gentlemen, hop on the phone. Add some more gold in particular, but silver too, to your portfolio. For all your precious metal needs, Discount Gold and Silver Trading's the one to call at 1-800-375-4188. Well, I'm reading that there's a massive wealth gap between workers in unions and non-unionized workers across different education levels, according to a new analysis from the think tank Center for American Progress. CAP, we'll call them CAP, typically reports that typically unionized workers earn about 10 to 15% more than their non-union peers for the same kind of jobs, but these wealth gaps are far wider now, an indication that the benefits of union membership may be accruing to workers over time. In college, the report says it's still one of the best paths to accumulate wealth, according to the data. But CAP's numbers point to an alternative for those who might not want to spend the time or money on a college education, namely union membership. Aside from higher pay, union members have more job security. Members are also likely to have defined benefit pensions and access to better health care, most of it paid by their employers or union fund. So they're less apt to go into debt when they're sick. Now, researchers at CAP looked at the Fed survey of consumer finances covering 2022 data. They examined households where an adult age 25 or older is working and earning a wage or salary. Non-working wealthy individuals, along with business owners and retirees, aren't included in this study. And their wealth numbers could certainly tighten the gap. Now, a union household includes a worker who is covered by a union contract. And wealth is defined as the total value of what people own, you know, real estate, bank accounts, investments, etc., minus the value of their debts, mortgage, car loans, etc. Overall, those in unions had median wealth of $338,500 compared to, we'll round it to $200,000 for non-union workers. Union workers had a higher home ownership rate too, 71% versus 65% for non-union. And 60% had a defined benefit pension plan versus just 24% of the non-union group. Now, unionized workers with no high school diploma have more than three times the wealth of their non-union peers. And those with college under their belt, maybe an associate's degree, have 2.5 times the wealth. Folks in this group could include those in healthcare, like nurses and dental hygienists. But even college-educated union members are outpacing their peers. Workers in this category include teachers, professors, journalists, government employees, and, in fact, many nonprofit workers. In fact, the CAP workforce is unionized. Now, the CAP report finds an association between wealth and union membership, but it doesn't look at causation. So we can't know for sure what caused these high wealth levels and the widening gap. Plus, only 10% of the workforce is actually in a union. So we're talking about a very small group here. Nevertheless, some important considerations. Okay, now to change the subject, time for our weekly segment, Levity is Golden. Today's topic is glitter and glitz. If you're a big movie fan like I am, you've probably watched the latest edition of the Academy Awards show 2 weeks ago. And if you, like me, are somewhat starstruck, and you probably tuned in early to watch the annual red carpet show. Yes, I confess I'm a sucker. And the Oscars red carpet has become more commercialized than ever. Clothing and accessory brands and labels still view the Academy Awards as an important platform for promoting their glamorous products. And stars see it as another source of income for dresses, tuxedos, jewelry, shoes, purses, the whole gamut. A multi-year Dior contract, for example, can be worth millions to the man or woman wearing it, though most labels pay closer to $250,000 a year. That's according to Vogue Business. European luxury giants have been monopolizing the glitz at the Oscars, signing the biggest stars to contracts that require them to wear their brands. And here I thought my favorite actors and actresses were spending their hard-earned millions on their $5,000 tuxes and the $10,000 gowns we see them wearing. Apparently not so. And even though only about 30% of stars actually land a deal like this, expectations among celebrities have certainly changed the game. Independent fashion brands were once central to the Oscars tradition of celebrity self-expression through fashion are now finding it harder to compete. Instead, they're targeting the smaller film and music award shows like Sundance, SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, and the Independent Spirit Awards. Viewership of the yearly award show has fallen dramatically over the past decade. The Oscars, I'm talking about, from 40 million in 2014 to under 19 million last year. No word on this year's show, which I probably would guess was a little lower. Super Bowl, on the other hand, appears to have no equal in pulling over 100 million people together. and in fact might be poised for its own red carpet someday. We can only hope. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is this week's Levity is Golden. Well, a sort of a follow-up to that story on union versus non-union wealth, total assets in employee share ownership plans exceeded $2 trillion in 2021, last year for which data is available, and it's almost certainly have risen since then. Unions exist to ensure that owners share their wealth with their workers. Now, under an ESOP, where companies are owned and controlled by their employees, that happens automatically. There are roughly 15 million participants in such plans in the U.S., including more than 10 million active participants. Many of them, including longtime employees at companies like Publix, are actually millionaires, on paper, of course. And when it's time for founders to sell their company, they often choose to do so via an ESOP. Excuse me, effectively handing it over to their employees while deferring or avoiding capital gains taxes on the sale. Now, those kinds of deals, known as leveraged ESOPs, are more popular than ever, according to CSG Partners, an ESOP advisory firm. The buyers, who are the employees, don't have to put up the cash for the deal. Instead, the purchase is financed, and they build up their equity over typically 20 years, sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more. As of the end of 2021, the most recent year for which we have the data, there were over 3,400 leveraged ESOPs with an average of $166,000 in assets per participant. That number, a large part of the wealth of ESOP employees, rose 44% between 2018 and 21. Now, while these leveraged ESOPs account for most new ESOPs, it's the more established unleveraged ESOPs that account for the lion's share of total assets. Their $1.8 trillion in total assets works out to about $139,000 per participant. Still not an insignificant amount. ESOPs, like unions, have proven to be a very effective wealth creation mechanism for Americans without college degrees. Hey, according to a new survey of human resource professionals out yesterday, companies expect to give out 4.5% raises this year. It's a little dip from the 4.8 average bump given in 2023. And it's another sign that the job market is cooling some, but is still strong. Raises will likely outpace inflation again in 2024, they say. Just over 79% of companies plan on giving raises this year, and that's the lowest since 2021, 6 points below 2019, according to PayScale, which has conducted the survey for the past decade and a half. About a third of the respondents are in industries mostly made up of blue-collar workers who are seeing bigger raises than their white-collar co-workers. Respondents were also asked about pay transparency. It's an issue now in the spotlight as more states pass laws requiring companies to list salary ranges in their job postings. It's a move mainly to promote pay equity. Many more companies are sharing these numbers now. 39% in this survey said they do it regardless of the law. And 21% said they do it only when it's required. That's up from 27% and 18% the year before. But the share of companies that said they're resisting pay transparency rose a tad too from last year, 13% up from 11%. Now, these could be companies that aren't in states where the practice is required and just don't want to do it. Or companies possibly that aren't complying with the law. Employers in Washington State, for example, are facing lawsuits for failing to disclose salary information. That state's law went into effect last January. And quickly, last this segment, Americans paid nearly 50% more in credit card expenses last year compared to 2020. Last year, credit card holders in the U.S. alone shelled out $157 billion in interest and fees on their credit cards, increase of $51 billion over 2020. Talk about an outrage. And yes, we are heading into another break. I hope you're going to stick around. We'll be back after these few important messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. Brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. For all your precious metal needs, call us at 1-800-375-4188. For decades, the Department of Justice pushed for more competition in the real estate market, and now the agency might be getting its way. Pressure from the DOJ's antitrust division likely played a role in getting to the game-changing class action settlement announced last Friday by the National Association of Realtors. NAR's president, Kevin Sears, a licensed realtor for 20 years, told hundreds in the industry at a conference in February, "We've been in their crosshairs for as long as I've been involved at the National Association of Realtors. The writing was on the wall," he told the audience. His group faced an onslaught of lawsuits over how commissions are offered and the possibility of having to shell out more than $5 billion in damages in just one case. The DOJ, though, he said, was the bigger problem. "The way we operate our business is going to change now," he added. "Either embrace and adapt, or it's going to be forced down our throats." Yes, last Friday, NAR announced it would settle some of the class action lawsuits, including the $5 billion one that were filed by home sellers who alleged the industry group conspired with real estate companies across the country to fix prices. The NAR said it would no longer allow real estate agents for home sellers to offer buyer agents commissions in real estate listings. A seemingly small fix, but one with huge implications, where they often shared commissions of 5 or 6%. Now, even though the DOJ wasn't a party in the suit, it's been investigating the industry for years. In fact, all the way back to the 1930s. More recently, it was a DOJ lawsuit that made it possible for sites like Zillow and Redfin to begin posting real estate listings. Excuse me. During the Trump administration, the agency soldiered on with a lawsuit and settlement over anti-competitive practices. But in 2021, under the new Biden administration, the agency filed to stop that agreement from going through. They argued it would have prevented the department from pursuing the NAR in the future. Well, whatever, their suit is still working its way through the courts. But in the meantime, the agency didn't sit on its heels. In February, the DOJ filed an objection to a different settlement in a case over commissions in Massachusetts. That suit mirrors the big case that was settled last week. In filing that particular objection, the DOJ was effectively letting the industry know what kind of settlement would meet the department's approval. The deal announced last Friday looks a lot more like what the department said it would like to see, that is, a decoupling where agents for home sellers no longer set commission rates for agents of buyers. Steve Brobeck, who's a senior fellow at the Consumer Federation of America, said that objection was a game changer. They got what they wanted. Now, the court hasn't yet approved this settlement, and the DOJ is still wading through its details. And already critics of the deal are saying it might not do the trick. And DOJ may find the deal, which still allows the possibility of sellers negotiating to pay buyer agent fees, doesn't go far enough. Well, we will see. President Biden announced $20 billion in grants and loans to Intel, U.S. company, to expand its semiconductor production. This was at a stop in Arizona yesterday, in a move the administration claims will lead to 10,000 new jobs there in Arizona. Biden, not coincidentally, a big swing state in this year's presidential elections. Biden is heading into the 2024 campaign with a big cash advantage right now over the former President Trump, not counting all the dark money being spent on behalf of both candidates by unnamed billionaires. Biden also has the power of the presidency and billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, even hundreds of billions of dollars in federal funds to release states. Biden flexed those muscles in Chandler, Arizona, as he unwrapped the biggest award in the $52 billion CHIPS and Science Act he signed into law in 2022. It's all part of his pitch to voters that his three signature legislative accomplishments, infrastructure, CHIPS, and green energy, will directly improve their financial standing and grow the broader economy. He's using a three-day, three-state tour to make a series of policy and political pronouncements, including the launch of his Latinos for Biden, Latinos con Biden, the other day. In addition to the $8.5 billion in grants, Intel's eligible for $11 billion in loans from the Commerce Department. Those awards, along with a separate tax credit from the Treasury Department, will lead to an estimated $100 billion private investment from U.S.-based Intel. The administration expects Intel will use the money to help build or expand facilities in Arizona, Ohio, New Mexico, and Oregon, and help add a total of 30,000 new jobs. You got Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo saying, last month I set an aggressive goal for the CHIPS program that America would produce roughly 20% of the world's leading edge chips by the end of the decade. And today's announcement is going to put us on track to meet that goal. Well, we will see, won't we? Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger responded, today's a defining moment for the U.S. and for Intel as we work to power the next great chapter of American semiconductor manufacturing innovation. Ohio, by the way, where one of the Senate's most embattled Democrats Banking Committee Chair, Senator Sherrod Brown, is fighting to hold on to his seat. Ohio is expected to gain an estimated 3,000 permanent and 7,000 temporary construction jobs from Intel's new hubs there, leading up to the 2022 midterm elections. Biden visited Syracuse, New York, to highlight Micron's plan to invest $100 billion over a 20-year period to build a mega fab semiconductor factory there. Pardon me. Well, we know now markets loved yesterday's Fedapalooza, with stocks reaching new highs, gold reaching new highs, and silver over $25. After all, Fed officials' projections continue to point to 3 interest rate cuts on the way this year, while Jerome Powell, Fed chair, showed only moderate concern about elevated January and February inflation readings. However, some analysts have a slightly more nuanced interpretation of the Fed's message. There was a move in what Fed leaders anticipate for the economy this year versus their views just 3 months ago. It just isn't captured in the median projection for rates that markets have been obsessing over. A few months ago, a meaningful contingent of 5 members of the Fed's policymaking open market committee anticipated 4 or more rate cuts this year. Now, only 1 official holds that view. At the same time, their consensus view of GDP growth is up pretty sharply, with the median official now seeing 2.1% growth this year, up significantly from 1.4% in December. The growth projections upgrade, paired with only modest adjustments to their inflation forecast, implies a supply-side-driven growth. That's an increase in the labor market and productivity that would keep the Goldilocks economy of late 23 going through 24. So, policymakers have greater confidence about the growth outlook, but also see lower odds that there will be deep rate cuts anytime soon. But as Axios's Courtney Brown and Neil Irwin emphasize, for that forecast to become reality, including rate cuts as early as June, inflation numbers will need to cooperate, which they certainly didn't in the first 2 months of the year. And last week, I wrote and talked about the history behind the Fed's 2% inflation target and about why it doesn't have a more specific maximum or full employment target. Investopedia defines full employment as an economic situation in which all available labor resources are being used in the most efficient way possible. The Bureau of Labor Statistics defines it as the level of unemployment that exists in the economy with a steady, non-accelerating rate of inflation. Still another definition is the economic condition in which virtually everyone who's able and willing to work is working. Now, while the actual number constituting full employment has varied over the years, the headline unemployment rate of 4 to 5% is often considered full employment, or at least it had been. Many economists believe this level of employment is enough to minimize inflation and allow workers to move between jobs. Well, much to my chagrin, the Biden White House's view of the labor market is that it will reach full employment if it hasn't. That's according to a major report from its in-house economists out this morning. Biden's re-election hopes, in fact, hinge in large part on the job market remaining robust, creating wide-ranging benefits for workers while inflation continues to fall. His economic team argues that is indeed plausible, contrary to inflation-fighting economic theory. The economic report of the president, issued by the White House Council of Economic Advisors, describes little evidence that tight labor markets in the post-pandemic era caused higher inflation that would have been the case otherwise. Again, the precise level of full employment is subject to a lot of debate, with different economic models spitting out various estimates. The government's headline U3 unemployment rate is 3.9% as of February. When you include people working part-time who want full-time work plus other discouraged job seekers who've stopped looking for work for several months, the so-called U6 rate is 7.3%. Not really that close to anything considered full employment in the past. Jared Bernstein, who chairs the Council of Economic Advisers, said, "I think we're certainly hovering around full employment. What we're seeing now is the maintenance of full employment with significant disinflation." He argues that if full employment were the central cause of the current inflation surge, the easing of price pressure should have brought about a substantial slackening of the labor market. Well, but we know it hasn't. Workers are still enjoying many of the side effects of a strong labor market, including shrinking racial and gender gaps in employment and strong bargaining power on the part of workers. Bernstein adds that the benefits of full employment multiply when these conditions persist. For instance, the latest government jobs report shows the employment gap between prime working age black and white workers is at a record low. Meanwhile, unions have scored historic labor deals in the past couple of years, a sign that workers have the upper hand. The current dynamics of the job market have striking differences from the full employment of pre-pandemic times, though. On the negative side, strong inflation has eaten away at wage gains. But unlike in the 2010s, nominal wages have soared. And now that the inflation rate has subsided from its 2022 peak, there are gains in real terms, in inflation-adjusted terms. There's also a productivity boom underway, allowing that to be the case without inflation fears. Bernstein also points to the administration's efforts to build up domestic manufacturing. That wasn't happening back then, he says. We would characterize this as a period of full employment with a side of strong investment. Ladies and gentlemen, with all due respect to Bernstein, we are not in a period of full or maximum employment, I believe. Yes, the job market has been strong and certainly resilient in the face of high inflation and higher interest rates. But to call this period as full employment, I just believe it's not accurate. But hey, I'm just a mere student of the political economy who only earned B's in my economics classes in grad school many years ago. To me, it's another classic example of why the government, our elected officials, the media, and economists alike all have to start talking about unemployment in terms of the government's U6 rate, not the headline U3 rate. In short, the Fed needs to get serious about defining a specific level or range of unemployment, or another appropriate gauge, like the labor participation rate that many economists prefer, that lets us know how close or far we actually are from its full employment mandate. That's the way I see it. I'm sticking with it. And that's all the time we have for today's program, more importantly. I'll be back next Tuesday for the last week of our 4 o'clock program. And I'll be back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also be on the lookout for our blog first thing in the morning. Thanks always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Have a great evening. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.
Still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.
Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? Theparamol.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure, but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-816.